is the Dazer update for November 4th, 2018. I'm Flipholder Alpha.
I'm Brandon Parkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
I'm Jamie Victoria.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And yeah, it was a pretty big news week this week. BlizzCon happened. Yeah, that was a thing. Smash had a bunch of announcements. I think that's pretty much everything we ever needed to know about Smash Ultimate is now known. Yeah, we've still got lots of news to talk about. So first up, we've been doing stuff. And for me, well, yeah, mostly the same stuff. Yeah, Shining Force, still almost finished that last battle now. So yeah, I'll probably have that finished tonight. Grip Combat Racing, which is actually pretty good. Kind of enjoying that more than I thought I would, given the fact that it's... well, it's basically Roll Cage from the original PlayStation, but made better. And yeah, it's fun. If you like your futuristic racing games, this one's definitely one worth checking out at the very least. And apart from that, well, the old Castlevania and Defense Grid 2 and all those other fine games that I continue to go back to. But mostly for the weekend, it's been Tetris Effect, because that demo is, yeah, it's awesome. I don't really know how much more to describe that one other than the fact that, yeah, it's Tetris with a sensory overload complex. So, yeah, Tetsuya Mizuguchi plus Tetris equals brain melting. And, yeah, it really is brain melting. It's like once you start playing it, it's just something that happens. So, yeah, play it. If you hear this show before Monday, you'll still have time to get it. It's about a gig and a half demo. But yeah, that goes away soon. So yeah, try it. That's kind of been pretty much it for me. How about you, Brandon?
Yeah, well, like two of the other people here on this cast, my primary gaming has been Red Dead Redemption 2. I am now in the part of the game where you're in Layu, which is basically the South. And... it is definitely the South. It's hot as hell. The air is thick as pea soup. You know, there's a bunch of fucking Peckerwood dumbasses who think that there's still a cause to fight for. Everyone you meet is really sweet on the outside, but also really super judgmental, and the swamps are filled with gators and insects that want to kill you.
Hmm, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just like home, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. Mm. But other than that, I've also been playing Deltarune, which is the little Halloween present that Toby Fox gave us a few days ago.
How is it?
It is... Huh?
How is it?
What's that?
How is it?
It is... Well, it's... it's basically a sequel, sort of, to Undertale. And that is, you know, it's basically a sort of continuation of Undertale. It's got all of the stuff that you loved about the first game, all the, you know, weird humor and eccentric characters you immediately fall in love with.
Great music. My son is going to lose his shit when he hears about this.
And it's also they've taken the original sort of battle system from the first Undertale, which was in and of itself pretty amazing, and he's actually managed to one up it, because now there is because this time instead of just you a solo adventure, it's a party, and so now you've got commands that you have to do. There's puzzles sometimes you have to figure out. You have to deal with the fact that one of your party members is a berserker that will basically do whatever it wants in spite of what you want. I don't really want to give away too much, because much like with the first Undertale, this game's biggest impact is that you don't really know what's going to happen. So, I will say, however, is this. This game is episodic. Right now, what you're getting, and by the way, it's for free. For free. I want to point that out. It's for free. You can get it at for free from Toby Fox. It is episodic. Right now, what you've got now is chapter one, and it takes a few hours to finish. I don't know when chapter two is going to come out, but it will. And that's what I've been up to this week. So what about you, Chris?
Yeah, so I have been playing Hexalogic on the Switch, which is a puzzle game that is kind of hard to explain. It's a bit a mix of like Sudoku with Picross and very much like a math logic kind of game. Each of the levels is kind of like a board of these blank tiles, and on the edges of some of the tiles pointing in certain directions is a number. And so it wants you to lay down tiles numbered 1, 2, or 3 in those spots to have the sum be that number. What's really cool is when it starts to layer on some more mechanics, things like, I think the first thing you get is it'll have some tiles already in there with numbers that are above 3. So then it gives you higher numbers like, okay, now you got to figure all this out. And then from there, it's throws on these teleporting tiles that essentially will have up to 2 or 3 tiles will be the same number. So you go label one, the others will get labeled the same. And so then you have to figure those, how you get those numbers that way. And it keeps going on and on, adding layer on these other numbers, these other mechanics that just makes for a really cool puzzle game that was totally my jam, which is really cool. I ended up doing a video for my channel, putting that, and after I did that video, I ended up just rushing through the rest of the game. It's like 90 levels, so like 2 or 3 hours to beat at most, but it was totally my kind of game. And I kind of just blasted through the rest of it, which was a lot of fun. It's on Switch, Steam, and mobile. And at least on Switch, it's 33% off on sale for a couple more days. I think it's $2 now instead of $3. And that's a game I definitely recommend for people that like puzzle games. And it just has a really nice style to it. Kind of looks like a little bit like Threes, a little bit that kind of like cartoonish kind of style to it. Yeah. Just really snaps. I've also been playing the Tetris Effect Trial, played it in VR, and it looks fucking amazing. And I really just like the Lumines influence on that game.
Yeah.
Very much the music is influenced by how you move around on the board, when you put down pieces, all that sort of stuff. The journey mode has the sort of skin evolving a few times, at least for that first stage, which is really cool. And each of them feels a bit different. I think the third one is a bit faster than the others. So it has all that sort of influence, but it's Tetris.
Yep.
And I've got a video for that I'm going to be putting up later today. But yeah, that looks really cool. I look forward to getting the rest of the game when that's out later this week. I've also been just watching a lot of Giant Bomb's Extra Life stuff because that is going on this weekend. They've been doing, I think they're doing 6 straight days of streams. And right now is Alex Navarro doing 24 hours of Expert Rock Band 4 drums. Just killing himself.
Didn't they do that last year and almost pass out?
I think it was 18 hours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he passed out. Just his arms were just incredibly sore by the end. But I think he's taken a little bit longer breaks. After the first set he did, he took about 15 minutes off. So I'm hoping that he'll last a bit longer this time around.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's basically said whenever he's done with these streams, he basically can't really use his arms for a few days. Yeah, I'm trying to see what they have. Yeah, Dave Lang had the first day, Wednesday to Thursday morning. Then the East crew did Thursday afternoon and evening. Matt Pasquale did Thursday to Friday. Yeah, the West crew did Friday to Saturday. I was watching some of that. They played some of the new Jackbox Party Pack with the people in the chat doing the audience stuff.
Yeah,
that was pretty good. Yeah, Will Smith just finished up earlier today. Did Saturday, Sunday, and Alex is doing his until noon Monday. I guess Drew Scanlon's doing the rest of Monday, and Danny O'Dwyer's finishing up on Tuesday.
Hmm.
So, yeah, they got some good stuff there. I think they just became the highest ranking team for all of Extra Life right now.
Hmm.
During Alex's stream, yeah, I'm trying to look it up, the leaderboards. Yeah, they're at 172,000 total with all their people. Hmm. Yeah. See, Dungeons & Dragons is number two, but once Rooster Teeth starts, they're going to take over everything.
Yeah.
Because I think they're probably hoping to get 1 million at least. Not just outclasses everybody else, but they also get celebrities on their streams as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's been what I've been doing this most of this weekend, is watching that stuff when I can. So how about you, Dan Rep?
Yeah, I know I said I'd get more serious with Red Dead, but instead I got more serious with Dragon Quest, and I see the end coming soon. I can fly now, and that usually means you're almost done. So,
yep.
There's that. As for Red Dead, I did play a little bit last night. I've gotten to the point where I had to save John Marston from something, but other than that, I still don't know everybody's names yet. I spend most of my time plowing through the snow, and there were 2 points last night because, you know, we had the extra hour, so I was like, cool, I have an extra hour to play, had a coffee, and I found myself dying on my horse because I kept tapping the X button and falling off cliffs because I was falling asleep playing the game. So yeah, I'm also having trouble getting a knack for the controls. I was petting my horse, and then later I punched my horse twice. You know, luckily the horse didn't kick me, so there's still a good relationship there.
That's some Blazing Saddle shit.
Yeah. I'll talk about my slowness as we get into the more in-depth Red Dead discussion later.
All right.
I also downloaded the Tetris Effect demo, and man, this is... You know what? I had a lot of fun playing Luminous earlier this year, but this Tetris demo already blows it out of the water.
Yeah,
I will go that far in saying it. I know Filippo's actually played it a lot. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's only the first three sections that were available in the demo, right?
First three sections in the journey mode, and there's an extra one in the effects mode.
Okay, I did not know that. I know nothing about the effects mode, but from what I play there. So what happened was I went to an independent wrestling show somewhere near work, and after it was over, I went back to work to just get my car. But I was like, yeah, I'm not going to have time to really install Tetris at home, so I installed it on the work PS4, and then I played it there, and I was like, oh my god. I put the headphones on, and I was even more immersed. We had the PSVR there, but I was also drunk, so I didn't want to, you know,
vomit
all over the work floor. So... Yeah, this game is coming out this year, right?
It's coming out Friday.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, yeah. This is definitely going to be on my top 10 list.
There's yeah, no it's way it 10% off if you pre-order it. You get the little soundtrack sampler.
Yeah, I mean, like, right now we're at a spot where it's kind of hard to make a decision on buying a game over these next few days because Black Friday is so near.
Yeah.
And even though we have a good idea of what's going to be on sale, you know, you never know with these digital releases.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, that's largely it. What about you, Lee?
I've been doing the Red Dead thing, just like everybody else. I have quite a bit to say about that. I was watching BlizzCon. really interested in what they had going on over there, which we'll talk about over there. Like it really kind of like struck me as like some incredible like wins and then some incredible like just straight misses.
Did you see the Overwatch Nerf guns?
Yes.
Those
actually look super, super cool.
Yeah, goddammit, I had to buy two of them, so...
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the funny part is like, I watched the virtual ticket because I love Blizzard's games, and it was so interesting because this sort of feels like a year where they're really trying to figure out where they're going to want to go. Like, WoW has had a lot of missteps. Hearthstone seems to be recovering from some missteps that they had, or Hearthstone, however the fuck you pronounce it. I'm always going to say Hearthstone, even though I think that's probably wrong. Heroes of the Storm has been relatively like stable the entire time. And then, you know, we got stuff like the Warcraft 3 Remastered announced, which was awesome. Like, there's the new heroes in Overwatch, which also super cool, and Diablo Immortal, where people were like, what the fuck? So, you know, I don't know. I had a pretty in-depth conversation with some people on a forum, because one of the things that's been so interesting to me watching all of this is that it seems really, really apparent that Blizzard's the way that they actually develop their software seems to be kind of broken, in the sense that the normal feedback loop that happens with a lot of things, like, and we can get into the nuts and bolts of this, you know, in another show, is just basically you have a set of designers, and then you have a set of people that build the things that those designers want built, and then you get that stuff QA'd, and then you just iterate, which is something that they've always done. But they're one of the things that happens when you go through that iteration is that you also deal with feedback, and then you actually get things fixed. And they don't seem to be doing that at all. They seem to like, and you can see it in the Diablo announcement. You can see it in kind of like their course correction that they're doing with WoW again. And like the thing that's weird is that this is all stuff that Blizzard. Like, Blizzard is a top-tier developer. They're not some fucking indie studio. Like, they know better than this. And they just – anyway, well, we can get into that, because I think a lot of it's tied to the Diablo announcement. But, yeah, so I've just been just trying to play, you know, that stuff here and there, trying to play WoW with my wife, which I'm just not really enjoying the game that much, but I do enjoy playing with my wife. I do enjoy doing the dungeons. And then I got this new desk that I've set up, and there are a lot of fumes in my room right now. So I've been letting it air out, because it's got like this this like type of varnish coating on it. So I've been doing that, and then my son keeps bringing Halloween candy down to my office,
which means you have to eat it.
which I have to. I mean, God, what kind of monster would I be if I was like, no, son, I don't need these Kit Kats. So yeah, that's
everyone needs Kit Kats,
right? Yes. So that's what I've had going on. It's been an interesting week. So I haven't been able to game as much as I would like, but the majority of the gaming that I've been doing has definitely been on Red Dead, and I have quite a bit to say about that when we get there. That game is I've never played anything like it. I'm very we'll get into it. I have a lot of things that I could sort of wax poetic about it, because there's really nothing out there like it. But at the same time, I kind of wonder if there ever will be. Something else like that again. Like, there's a level of polish in this game that I don't think I've ever seen ever. It's pretty stunning, but I don't know that really translates into something that is fun. Red Dead, not fun, because the game is definitely fun, but it very much requires that you take it on its own terms. Just based on that, like, you know, this seems like the most hyped game ever, but there's no way it's going to get anywhere near the sales numbers of GTA, because it's not the same kind of hook. But it is definitely a game that I'm very happy got made. But I'm really kind of curious where it's going to occupy itself, you know, in terms of lists and everything. I think we'll see a ton of people that are like, this is the fucking game of the year and shit like that. But I wonder if it'll be one of those things where if you look at it, and, you know, 10 or 15 years, like what people will actually think about it. Cause I just, it's a very unique game. I've never played anything like it. So we can get into that when we get there.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's pretty much what I've been doing.
Yeah. Also, hi, Pat.
Hey. I'm home now.
So. Yeah, he literally ran home. So sorry about that.
I had no idea we were doing a regular show this week. So
neither did we.
It was just going to be the Red Dead special. Yeah. I was going to,
what a guy. Kind
of take the week off, but
Yeah,
there's been news that we're going to be covering, and so I definitely want to be here for that.
Yeah, so you know, Blizzard happened, and then Smash happened, and yeah, so we kind of had to really talk about it. Otherwise, we'd get behind for next week, and that would be irritating. So yeah, let's get into. Well, I guess we could give you the opportunity to let us know what you've been playing. I'm guessing Soul Calibur 6, probably.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably Soul Calibur and NHL. I'm just going out on a limb here. Tell me if I'm wrong.
No, it's true. And as well as that that Twine development tool that you pointed me toward, Phil, that's a fucking genius app.
Yep.
I'm definitely going to be getting a lot of use out of. I still don't think that even with those tools I have the ability to make a project come off on my own, but it'll definitely be a lot easier to get the groundwork in place than it was with something like RPG Maker, even if it completely overhauls the original vision for it. It'll get me something out of it.
Yeah.
Because this project has lived in my head for 19 years, so I have to kind of shit or get off the pot. What?
It lowers the barrier to entry, that's for sure.
It really does. But you're right. There's a lot of Soul Calibur. There's a lot of NHL. Not as much NHL as I would like, but I'll be getting into that again pretty soon. I'm actually thinking about doing a from the ground up re-expansion draft on Twitch so that I can go over my philosophy about how to build a franchise and, correct approach to building your on ice product, but I would definitely have to plan and schedule something like that out because it's the kind of thing that I'd want a turnout for.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so So let's get into the show itself then, and we're starting off a new month, and that means new games for PlayStation Plus and games with gold. Chris, what do we got this month?
Yeah, for PlayStation Plus, we have Bulletstorm Full Clip Edition.
Ooh.
Yep.
Just completely ridiculous and awesome.
And you don't get the Duke Nukem stuff unless you want to pay for it.
Yeah, well, wouldn't get that anyway, but...
Yeah. Okay. And on the other side is Yakuza Kiwami.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can jump in on the Yakuza series if you haven't done so yet.
Yep.
And that is the first game that was remade. Mm. Let's see. The rest of it, we have Jackbox Party Pack 2 for the PS3, which is a pretty good one. I'm trying to see what all is in there.
Yeah, and we're kind of running out on the clock on the PS3 here. There's not going to be that many more months where there are PS3 games. So
Yeah,
it's got Fibbage 2 in it. It's Quiplash XL. And
it's almost like they released firmware 4.83 out of spite.
They did. Literally did.
Yeah,
they did just not that I'm bitter or anything.
Yeah, I want to say I saw that that was largely to renew the Blu-ray license for the new stuff.
Yeah.
Also coming for PS3 is Arcado series, which is a pretty good lineup of arcade-style games. There's a lot of stuff that was released in like PSP minis.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. But, some good stuff there. For Vita and PS4, there's Burly Men at Sea, which is, I think, an adventure game. About, guess what, Burly Men at Sea.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I would guess pirates, but anyway.
Folktale about a trio of large bearded fishmen who step away from the ordinary to seek adventure in early 20th century Scandinavia.
Hmm.
It has a really nice art style to it. Let's see. The other game for PS4 and Vita is Roundabout, which is the very silly game from No Goblin that is, if you know the rotating style of like irritating stick, that is.
Yeah, this is the game where you play the limo driver.
Yeah, who does the rotating limo service.
Yeah.
And she is a silent character, but has lots of FMB.
Mm-hmm.
With lots of very silly, stupid characters.
It is legitimately hilarious.
Yes. And they got some very much like some nice cameos from people around the industry.
Mm-hmm.
I think Fob Washed, who's one of the Giant Bomb, one of the bigger Giant Bomb fans, is in this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's that game's really dumb and really, really fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is PlayStation Plus for this month.
Yep.
It's pretty good stuff. For games with gold, let's see, available right now for Xbox One is Battlefield 1.
Mm-hmm.
Which goes along with them just giving away the season pass constantly for the last couple months.
Yeah.
And see, the other one that's going to be starting on November 16th for Xbox One is Race the Sun, which is a game I really like. Oh. It's very much like an endless runner, but you pilot like a very low-poly kind of ship.
Yeah.
You're trying to avoid obstacles, but the sort of horizontal nature of the stages is actually pretty cool. So you can sort of go off to the left, and there's like legitimate paths over there. It's pretty wide stages, but yeah, you're trying to complete, you know, quick little missions and such between stages, and sort of gets unlock new abilities and such. So you get like double jumps, ability to hold more power ups, that sort of stuff. That's pretty cool. For Xbox 360 stuff, available right now is Assassin's Creed, the original.
Okay.
So you can see where the bugginess started in that series. The brokenness. I remember playing that game on PS3 in, what, 2007, I think, when that first one came out.
Yeah.
The very last mission decides, hey, this game isn't running poorly enough. Let's put everybody in that assassin's village in front of this building that you need to get to. And it just runs like shit because it's all these NPCs hanging out here. It's okay when they're all spread out, but not in one area.
Yeah. I'll say one thing. The PS3 version really didn't run well. I remember playing through the 360 version.
Yeah, the 360 version ran fine.
On that particular scene, it had no issue. So,
okay.
Yeah.
But there's lots of crashes, too, with those games.
Yeah. 360 version, I think that was a time. That was kind of the time when there was a very big difference between the two versions of the game. So, yeah.
I remember playing the Naruto games on Xbox 360. It was the same engine, and those crashed a lot.
Mm. Yeah, well, those did crash a lot.
Yeah. But also for Xbox 360, starting on the 16th, is Dante's Inferno, which I've also been playing because I have EA access, so two of these four games I already have access to for free.
Yeah.
I get to slightly upgrade them to slightly more owned, I guess.
Yeah.
That's actually a solid little God of War clone.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
not bad.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I was playing a bit of it, the intro. Then I got to the second part where there was gameplay. It's like, all right, I've had enough of this, and came back. It's like, hey, you want to start a new game? It's like, wait, where's
the save?
It's like, oh shit, I have to go find fucking save points. I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
And I got to start over. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I want to do that. Also, the very first scene is kind of gruesome because he's sewing this cross into his chest.
Mm-hmm.
That's very much a part of the game where I was like, just look at what's on the computer now. I don't want to see this guy.
Yeah, it definitely has some edgelord tendencies, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Extremely edgelord tendencies.
Yep.
Like, and then about halfway, and then there's like a point like in the last third of the game where everybody, where the developers basically just gave up.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. It's one of those games where there's like bosses that have like a bunch of naked boobs.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
For no reason whatsoever.
Well, hell.
Just cause.
Yeah. Hey, we're going into hell.
Yeah.
Guess what? There's going to be rings for all the different sins.
Yep.
But yeah, that game's pretty good. And yeah, that is available 16? On the 16th. Yeah. I think that's it. So, pretty decent lineup.
Yeah, not bad.
Where they're giving away Battlefield 1, like, a week away from Battlefield
5 coming out, or V.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
But I guess they just want people playing Battlefield.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
So, okay, let's get into, I guess we could call it the BlizzCon block. We'll start off with the elephant in the room, which was Diablo Immortal. And
yeah, they pulled a Square Enix with this.
The most awkward announcement ever. Maybe not the announcement itself wasn't so awkward, but the reception to it.
People got their expectations up.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, there's this first event, and maybe that's where Diablo 4 is going to get announced.
Then ooh,
I think
yeah.
A week ago, Blizzard actually said, temper your expectations.
Yeah. People are like, oh, Diablo 4.
Yeah, they told people, and they were just not interested in hearing it.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
and apparently, like, the big thing was, as Blizzard said, like, we have multiple Diablo projects we are working on. But basically, like, mm-hmm. their announcement previous to that was, we are not going to announce Diablo 4.
Yeah.
So just, you know, chill.
Hmm. And people were like, oh, maybe it's Diablo or Diablo 2 remastered.
Yeah, exactly. Some sort of remaster, which, to be fair, is not a thing to kind of not expect because, you know, Blizzard has StarCraft remastered. Now they have Warcraft 3 remastered.
They did that Diablo event in Diablo 3.
Yeah.
Kind of had some reworked stages like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so the thing is that I think one of the things that's really important to keep in mind here is that this is also the Blizzard that – There's a very like stratified version of Blizzard, like where you can tell they have like the old school folks working on things and then like new school folks working on things. And like there's specific sort of demarcations in those games. The Diablo 3 with everything that happened with the auction house and everything was something that was, you know, obviously very much not designed with the way that old school Blizzard did things. Right. And WoW kind of had that same split when they went with Cataclysm that really kind of redefined the way the game works and all kinds of stuff. StarCraft 2 had it when they decided, okay, we're not going to do StarCraft 2. We're going to do StarCraft 2 part 1, part 2, and part 3. You know, so there's these demarcations in them. And then this latest one now really seems to be sort of a similar thing with the Diablo team because Infernal gets announced. And I feel like on one hand, I feel for Blizzard. Like, so just to kind of give them a little bit of a break, like BlizzCon is their convention, right? Like they're going to be announcing things that make sense for them and where they have, a captive audience and really, frankly, an audience that's going to be the most receptive to the things that they're trying to do is going to be the audience at BlizzCon.
However, I mean, they've got a big mobile audience thanks to Hearthstone.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they have a very big mobile audience because of Hearthstone. But the thing that I think that a lot of these Diablo players are missing, and I'm not mad at them for it because I can understand the trepidation, but the big thing that they're missing is that Blizzard isn't just a company that makes games for America. There's a huge contingent of people in the East, particularly China and Korea, that play these games very differently than we do. And you can look at the person that they're the group that they're partnered with for Diablo Eternal is NetEase, which makes MMOs for mobile in China. And this feels very much like Blizzard trying to make their way into China and make a lot of money. The problem with that is, particularly from the Western front, is you have two specific things that happen at BlizzCon. BlizzCon is, I would literally bet money, is 90% PC players.
Yes.
Like, just because of that's Blizzard's background. So that's number one. Number two, you also really have, especially at this time, you have in the West, I think you have a fatigue and I think really sort of kind of boiling rage towards the idea of microtransactions.
Yeah.
Couple that with something like this where you have a group of people that were expecting an announcement that they didn't get, and instead they're basically being told about a game that they certainly didn't ask for. You know, you could see things in the past where a lot of Blizzard fans have basically said Blizzard is completely fucking out of touch. And this feels like that. Like, and for anybody that watched the actual announcement, you know, they there were people that were just kind of like taken aback. But then later on, like if you had the virtual ticket, you could watch them where they were doing a Q&A for Diablo. And it was like, so, you know, one guy stood up and said, like, is this just a late April Fool's joke?
Yeah.
and like the developer didn't know what to do with that, which to be fair, I can understand. Like this guy's probably been busting his ass. Their whole team has probably been busting their ass to really kind of make something that they thought people might be excited about. But the thing is it wasn't what those people were wanting. And I look at it in the same way that you look at something like really for lack of a better comparison is Chrono Cross. Chrono Cross is a fine game. But because it wasn't Chrono Trigger 2, which is what everybody wanted, nobody really gave it a chance. And this sort of feels like it may be the same
thing. And even some of the people who did give it a chance were disappointed because it wasn't Chrono Trigger 2.
Exactly. And this sort of feels like it could be the same thing, except now it also has the baggage of all this bullshit. Like, you know, oh, so what kind of fucking microtransactions are they going to tag onto us? How are they going to try and fuck us here? Like, when you, when you have all of that going on now in the industry, like, where, I mean, for fuck's sake, we have senators that are talking about legislation because of this. And I think this is something that, and I say this as a guy that's a fan of Blizzard's games, Blizzard is way too in love with RNG, not only just in WoW, with the sort of like the treadmill has sort of been exposed, I think, for a lot of people for how the game works, and it's made a lot of people leave to the you know, really kind of like the gambling in Overwatch and in Hearthstone and everything else like that. Like, the reward systems in place in a lot of Blizzard games right now are really out of whack, and it kind of goes against what Blizzard says that they're about. And so them sort of doubling down on a mobile game that nobody really seems like they wanted, at least from America, I think really just kind of shows how tone deaf they are in this. But at the same time, where the hell else were they supposed to announce this?
Yeah, you know? It seems like they should have had right after it, like, hey, here's Diablo 4.
Could have done is just shown a Diablo skull and put 4 and then done like what Blizzard always does, which is like the soon and then TM. You know, which could mean it's another 5 years. I mean, you guys remember when Diablo 3 got announced in like 2008.
Yeah.
And we didn't see it until 2012.
Yeah.
You know, StarCraft 2 got announced in 2007, and we didn't see it till 2010. So, you know, you throw that in there and let people know that you're working on this, and I think they'll be a lot more forgiving.
But and they'll ask questions at the Q&A and just like, yeah, we're not talking about that right now.
Not talking about it. This is what we're doing. But I think that just – so the thing that happened at BlizzCon was during the Q&A panel, the first guy asked about, like, is this an April Fool's joke? And the guy was just like, no. And then after that, another guy came up and said, you know, this kind of seems cool. There's some features in this that we've been asking for in the regular game for a long time. So is this going to be strictly mobile, or is it going to come to PC, or is it just like mobile for like forever? And the developer said basically like, no, you know, we're working on this for iOS and Android, and we have no plans whatsoever to bring this to the PC space. And then everybody started booing. And the response, and this I think was sort of really telling, and is frankly one of the reasons why people throw this kind of shit at Blizzard, is the response was, come on, don't you guys have phones? Don't any of you guys play anything on tablet? And it's like,
no, actually, bro, they don't. That's
bro, that's not the point. Even if they did, it doesn't matter. Like, Hearthstone makes sense for like as a tablet or a phone game because you don't have to do much to make it work. You're just sliding cards around on a screen, you know. And at least the model for Hearthstone makes sense. It's a trading card game, so you're used to having that sort of, you know, I open a pack, what do I get? That kind of shit. But with this, when most, I think, Americans think about the mobile space, they think of shovelware. No offense, DanRev. But they think of shovelware that's designed to literally, like, steal your money. And for a company like Blizzard, who has really kind of skated the edge of that for years, where they used to be able to just be, I mean, you guys remember the Blizzard of old was unimpeachable. Like, you motherfuckers supported Diablo 1 and 2. Without any money on Battle.net, you supported all the Warcraft games on Battle.net without taking any extra money. Like, you know, you've seen that's the way that company used to behave. And then now you have this where it's like, look, a company's a company. It's got to make money. We get that. But in this way, with this company, meaning NetEase, how else are you going to make – and especially with their track record of Diablo, with what happened with Diablo 3, where it was a Skinner box designed to take your money before they basically threw the whole team out and put a new one in to fix it. How else do you expect people to react to this?
Yeah.
Like, seriously, like, what the fuck were you thinking?
Yeah. And I think, you know, if his reaction had been maybe a little bit different, I think the audience reception might have been a bit better. If he had said instead of we have no plans to bring this to the PC, but said, well, maybe some of those features do end up in the PC version, that might have been
definitely
a different
softened the blow.
Yeah, but
It's just really telling because I think they expected everybody to be like, this is fucking awesome, Diablo on phones. And you know what? That in and of itself actually sounds pretty cool. Diablo on phones sounds pretty awesome. However, a game being on mobile also conjures up a lot of other bullshit that I think a lot of people are really unwilling to deal with. And I think rightfully so.
Yeah, if it's a free-to-play, there's expectations there that they're just going to be monetized to hell and annoyed every 5 minutes.
Especially considering their parent company.
Yeah, Activision. I think we're kind of starting to see those cracks now. So,
yep.
But there is... I also noticed that they didn't mention any sort of price point, so the possibility is there that they charge $9.99 for the game and there's no microtransactions. Nobody has actually given that any thought.
I don't think there's any way specifically because of the money they're making off of Hearthstone.
Yeah.
I think that has shown them like, hey, we can make a lot of money doing this. And I think it's really the biggest thing that I'm taking out of all of this is that, that sort of visceral reaction that you're seeing, I think also really goes to the fact that I think gamers as a whole are getting really fucking tired of microtransactions because there doesn't seem to be any upside to the consumer for those microtransactions for the most part. Like you can argue like in the case of Overwatch, which I think if out of any of these games that are out there, I think does microtransactions pretty well because, you know, you're getting your free characters, you're doing all that. Like they announced new characters this at BlizzCon that's just going to be free and you can get in. And, you know, like that, I think it's sort of, that's a trade you can see. But in a mobile game, there typically isn't any trade. It's just, we are going to fuck your wallet as hard as we can in any way that we can for the most part. And I think that's one of those things that people are just like, this isn't the way we want to see, especially that group of fans that paid money, bought tickets, got hotel rooms, flew across the country. Whatever. Like that is not what they're trying to see where they feel like they've put out a ton of money for this company. And then this company is going to pull some shit. That's going to be like, you know, how can we get the most out of you?
Yeah.
Like, that's not a good look.
I mean,
it's not really the same audience as the typical mobile audience where they expect microtransactions. Because they refuse to pay money for games for the most part on mobile.
Yeah.
And they don't ever really think about it the way that, you know, PC or console gamers do.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, though, that I do think is kind of important is that a lot of those people had the same exact reaction to Diablo on consoles. And Diablo on consoles was great. Yeah. You know, so I think that
on
also
consoles is better than it is on PC.
Even Diablo 3, like,
I agree.
There's too much color in this.
Yeah.
Like that sort of thing. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's. I think it's one of those things that sucks for them because they have such a tremendous amount of expectations around what they're doing that it doesn't feel like they could win. But the ironic part about it is that there is a template for that. Like, there wasn't any bad reaction to anything that anybody talked about with Overwatch this weekend. Like, if you watch, like, the any of the BlizzCon stuff, like, the Diablo shit seemed like people wanted to kill themselves. The Overwatch thing was, like, people were ready to fuck in the fucking sitting in the chairs. Like, they were so happy. Like, this is fucking amazing. Everything is awesome, you know? And I think, though, I do think part of that has to do with who's leading the Overwatch team, which is Jeff Kaplan, the guy that used to lead WoW. He seems to be much more tuned in with the way that their customers work and what they expect than some of the other people that are over some of their other games. And, you know, Hearthstone had a huge shift about 2 years ago when Rob Pardo left, who was one of the co-founders of Blizzard. And, you know, from there, Hearthstone started getting really kind of wild and really hanging on the over-monetization schemes that everybody complained about, and now they're, you know, sort of trying to finally fix. And I think the biggest thing that Blizzard has to be careful about is that eventually everybody's goodwill towards them will run out. You can't just sit here all the time and go, well, we're going to do better. We're going to do better. Eventually the customers are going to go, fuck it.
Yeah.
We gave you how many fucking chances? Just fuck it. We can't keep doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be the big problem for them, and I'm not sure how they're going to recover from it.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest here. It's an announcement like this, despite the fact that it's Diablo, this shouldn't have been a BlizzCon main stage announcement. I don't think knowing your audience is really important. If you're going after that particular mobile audience, this is something you announce on the side. And you do show that Diablo 4 stinger, or at least, you know, concept art or whatever. Just
Do it the same way that Bethesda did it at E3, where they announced Elder Scrolls Blades and said, hey, we're still working on Elder Scrolls 6 for next gen.
Yeah, that's all it really would have taken.
Yeah, here's a picture of a field. That's it.
Yeah.
So do you think this puts this particular project in the Metroid Prime Federation Force stall where the development studio is doomed to spend the next several months working on a title that they know nobody wants?
No.
No.
It's
no,
still no. going to make billions of dollars. Well,
yeah, that's just going to a different audience.
The thing is, it's not for us is the big thing. It's not for the American audience. This is a growth path to China.
Yeah.
And there's no other way around it, because the thing is, and again, it's sort of hard to get mad at them for trying to diversify this kind of thing, but maybe it's also partly like, and you're just looking at this from like a business standpoint, you're like, you know, maybe you shouldn't have, you know, put the Diablo name on this, but we're also, this is also a company that has really incredible IP. So then you come up with, okay, do they create something new, and then does it go out to die? But I also think there's a ton of expectation around Diablo, and particularly now that, you know, the Diablo 3 has been out for 6 years, and on top of that, Blizzard has not really given Diablo any love, with the exception of the console stuff, for a really long time. Mm-hmm. So it just seems sort of like a perfect storm of, this is, we knew we wanted something. We've been telling you forever that we wanted something. It's we know it's not a secret. You're working on something. And then they go, hey guys, how about this Diablo on mobile phones? And everybody's like, I don't know what I expected.
Wasn't this
definitely not this. And this is the worst thing that I could have expected. And it just, you know, it just doesn't work well for them at all. And like I said, it's really sort of, and again, you go back to it, man. Like, these companies got to make money. They got to keep existing. Like, that shit makes sense. But to have this sort of just nakedly be like, hey, this is what we're doing because we want to get into China, is just, you don't do that at BlizzCon. Or if you do, you attach it as a caveat to something. You don't make it the last thing announced on the main stage during the opening ceremonies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now it's just going to have that audience that it's not intended for just going to obsessively complain about it until they get the thing they want.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's just going to be the unending thing about
it. I do feel like the well has been poisoned for this game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. The people that are going to play don't know about any of this, really.
Yeah, basically.
No.
Yeah. But that wasn't the only things that they did announce, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. There was a lot of actually really cool. They announced the Warcraft 3 remastered, which is I'm so fucking hyped for. I loved Warcraft 3, and that was actually one of those announcements that was like universally loved. Everybody was like, "This is awesome." And the interesting part about it is if you watch the panels, because I had the virtual ticket, so I watched a lot of this stuff. If you watch the panels that they did after the opening ceremonies, this is a group of people that really love Warcraft 3. And they're the ones that were in charge of remastering this. And that part is really, really cool, because it's like, these guys are going, this is a game that we really love. This is a game that we want to honor. And this is the stuff that we're going to be doing for it. And you could really see that across the board with the announcement. And then, like, when you watch some of the panels that they did afterwards, one of the things that they talked a lot about was Warcraft 3, for anybody that doesn't know, really. So first of all, we wouldn't have Dota without Warcraft 3, by the way.
Right.
That was originally a modified version of Warcraft 3. That
still is a Warcraft 3.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But one of the things that they talked about doing is that they're keeping all of the underlying stuff intact. They're using the same engine as Warcraft 3. They've just been able to beef the fuck out of it.
That's what they did with StarCraft 2.
That's exactly what they did. Yeah, StarCraft. That's exactly what they did. So you can play with the old graphics, you can play with the new graphics. But the cool thing about it is that all the old modified maps and everything else like that, as long as they use the original assets, are basically plug and play with the new remastered game. Mm-hmm. Which is really, really fucking awesome, because that means that it has this wealth of content that's basically already built in, that people are going to be able to still take advantage of. Now, there was stuff that people did where they created their own assets and stuff like that. That stuff's not going to be plug and play. There'll have to be adjustments made for that. But this is very much like, we're just prettying up this game. Everything is going to work the way that it did before, and it's going to be fucking awesome. And I didn't see anybody saying anything bad about it or hear anything bad about it pretty much across anywhere. So that was one of those where they definitely did it right.
Yeah, I mean, what's to complain about with something like this? I mean, they're handling this completely properly, and I think that's kind of why a lot of people were hoping for the Diablo 2 remaster, because they know that's the way they're going to treat it. So eventually,
are they going to do something similar to what they did with StarCraft and make the original game free? Because that would be cool for somebody like me who's never played it.
Probably, but the thing is, the remaster itself is cheap. It's $30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but if I don't really care about RTSs.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's true. I think it's, I think for some people too, it makes sense for them as a legacy project because, without Warcraft 3, WoW doesn't work. And there's a lot of stuff in WoW that doesn't work. If you didn't have all the storyline and everything that was laid the groundwork for, with Warcraft 3. And then you couple that with WoW Classic, it just, all that stuff sort of goes together, which that was another thing that people are super, super excited about. I played the demo. Oh my God. I can't believe how old that game looks. And I've been a guy that's been playing WoW since 2004. Like, I forgot how ugly some of that looks, but it's going to give people some of what they want. And, you know, the interesting part about it is that it also, to me, really kind of shows that schism that Blizzard has happening. There's very much a new Blizzard and an old Blizzard. And these remasters, like the StarCraft remaster, the Warcraft remaster, and then WoW Classic, seems to be trying to gain back that group of people that they lost. But stuff like Diablo doesn't do that at all. Like, they would have been much better served getting a Diablo remaster, I think, at this BlizzCon instead of this mobile game. That would have made a lot of people happy. It would have made I don't think anybody would be nearly as pissed. And then they could have announced, you know, Infernal with it and going, hey, we got this Diablo remaster and we have this mobile game. And I don't think anybody would be mad at that point. No. Because they would feel like there was an alternative for their dollars. They don't have that now.
Yeah.
So, and then you had the Overwatch announcements with a new hero and a new level and all that stuff. I mean, and Ashe looks super cool. It looks like they're doing a lot to actually expand some of the lore of the game, which is also, again, really, really cool. And same thing, like, people were super, super excited about it. They really screwed the pooch. You know what's funny? Talking about it, like, the Diablo team, with the exception of when they redid everything for 2.0, just seems to have bad management overall. Because they just, like, with everything in the first, like, year and a half of Diablo 3 was just misstep after misstep after misstep. And now you have the same thing happening with Diablo Infernal. It's just like, this isn't what your customers are looking for. And then you turn around and it's like, all the stuff that they announced for WoW, people are super excited about. The WoW Classic, all of the stuff for Heroes of the Storm, with a new character that's born completely in the Nexus. And then they talked about all the reworks that they're still doing and all the extra stuff they're putting into the game. You have the stuff with Overwatch with the new characters. And then, you know, here's all the stuff that we're planning on doing going forward. You have Warcraft remastered. Like, all of this stuff is really good. And then just, you know, Diablo Infernal took a shit on everything.
that's really the story of the show when it comes to that. So
it's like going to a really good concert and then somebody shit in the corner and you're still trying to finish the rest of the concert, but you can still smell everything.
Yeah.
Anyways. You know?
So, quick PSA, on Battle.net right now, Destiny 2 is free for PC. If you haven't played Destiny 2, you can get in now and see what it's like.
For PC. Yeah. Okay.
11/18. It's from now till the 18th of November, so you got a couple of weeks to. Yeah,
and it's 80 gigs.
80 gigabytes.
Yeah, I freed up enough space on my solid state drive to download it. That's where I'm at.
Still
could you guys have ever imagined a time when a Bungie game would be given away for free?
No, I honestly couldn't.
I got Halo Reach for free.
No. I mean, like, they were literally like, we need people to play this, so we're going to give it away
free. Well, they need people to test out their new disc format thing, so they gave that out for free.
Yeah.
It's like a thing. But, yeah, but also it's like the MMO kind of thing. They'll give out your base thing free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even most MMOs don't do that. Like so.
I mean, WoW does.
No, WoW doesn't do that. You get the first 20 levels for free. Yeah, you get, but that's not the whole game. There's 120 levels in it.
Yeah, and Destiny 2 isn't the whole game either.
No, but if you have the base game and you don't have the expansions, you still get, what, 60 levels?
Hmm. Yeah, so Destiny 2 gives you more free. Yeah.
Right, but the difference, here's the key difference is level 20 in WoW, the vanilla WoW is 1 to 60. So you get even if you play the first 20 levels of the game, there's still restrictions. You can't trade. You can't talk to people. You can't do any of that. Giving away Destiny 2 without the expansions is still the original version of Destiny 2 complete.
All the updates.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to think that Bungie would be doing something like that. Like, the MMO model, like, I can still buy Final Fantasy 14, not buy any of the expansions, and I still get the vanilla Final Fantasy 14
experience. And you're buying it.
Yeah. But, like, But that, and that's like the key difference is like you're getting the entire Destiny 2 experience, the vanilla version of it, for free just because they don't have enough people. That's crazy to me to think in 2018. If we were talking about this 6 years ago, I don't think anybody would have been like, Bungie's going to give away their shit for free because they can't.
I think that's partly of their model of what they're trying to do is get people bought in and buying Forsaken if they like what they get.
Yeah.
And that is apparently done really well, Forsaken. It was one of the top selling things, I think, for last month. It's really brought the community back in for that, because that's done a lot of good stuff from what I've heard from people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, from when you consider comparing Destiny 2, how that was last year when it launched, to how it is now, there's a big difference.
Yeah.
So,
a lot of enthusiasm.
I mean, they were giving it away at Best Buy a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Part
on the consoles, which is just like, again, which is I can't even fathom that. Like that, this is where they're at. Because you can say this is how MMOs work or anything else like that. But even loot based games or anything, there's still typically a charge for that stuff up front, and just giving it all away for. Because how much is Forsaken?
$40.
$40. Yeah. Like it's still just wild for me. It's like drug dealer propositioning. Like just get a hit and then see if you want to pay me.
But does this go away on the 18th though? If you get it now, is it staying in your account?
No, it stays in your
Jesus.
Account. Yeah. So it doesn't. You might anybody that might ever play it on PC should just get it because why the fuck not?
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
All right. I think it was on Humble in one of the Humble bundles earlier this year too. Humble monthlies too. So,
Now I gotta install BattleNet again. God damn it! So another news: we got our first trailer for Medieval 2, and take my money, please.
Yep,
looks pretty good.
Yeah,
we were a little bit worried about Other Ocean being the ones to develop it, but looks like they're doing a pretty damn nice job.
And it seems like they're also working with a Sony team called International Software Development Team.
Oh, that's about as generic as it can get. Yeah.
Well, it's like the Sony Europe has XDev, which is external dev team, which works with a lot of their European partners.
Hmm.
Well, it's in case the project goes tits up, nobody will be attached to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't Sony also have Japan Studio?
They do.
Yeah, yeah, Japan Studio is actually really fucking good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they just released
as generic as it gets.
Yeah, but there's also Tokyo RPG Factory. It was like, okay, they're just cranking out RPGs.
Yep.
Japanese RPGs.
Yeah, it turns out RPGs take a long time to make.
They were announced back in, I think, 2014, 2015. They've done two games since.
Yeah. Turns out RPGs take a long time to make. I'm saying.
Games just take a long time to make.
Yeah.
Just look at any Kickstarter game, see when they originally promised the game to come out. It's usually a couple years later because they have no idea how long it's going to take.
Yeah.
A couple of years.
I think I was looking at Chasm, which was 2014, they said.
Yep.
They released it in summer 2018.
Yep.
So, but yeah, Medieval looks good. And it's continuing that trend of like first party Sony, reasons to own a PS4, basically. Awesome stuff. In other words, what do we got here? The full list of PlayStation Classic games has been revealed. Yay. Oh, boy.
Yeah, that shit is hot garbage.
You don't sound very enthusiastic, guys.
Well, well, let's go through these, because there are some here that are actually pretty cool, and there are some that just make you go, what in the actual fuck? So let's see here. What do we got? Here's the full list. Battle Arena Toshinden.
Obviously I wouldn't have put this game on there before Soul Blade, which I had on my list.
Hmm.
But any excuse you can to cram this soundtrack in people's ears is a good one.
Well, see, for me, and I'll agree with that, but the thing is, I think for me, like when I got my PlayStation, Toshinden was the first game I bought. That and Rudy.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that is one of, because that is a game that I will forever associate with PS1. Like, so it makes sense to me in that way. But it's also kind of one of those things like nobody's gonna fucking play this.
No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like legitimately, nobody's gonna fucking play this. It doesn't hold up.
Doesn't hold up. Yeah. Then we got Crash Bandicoot.
That being said, I would totally be in on buying the IP for a bargain basement price that I could actually afford if it meant actually being able to do something with it again.
Yeah, so there's that. Then, like I said, Crash Bandicoot 2, that's kind of a no-brainer, really.
It's Cool Borders 2.
Cool Borders 2. What are you looking at? Whoa. You know, not being able to see well, sometimes you miss... Well, yeah, Cool Borders 2. What?
That's cool, Cool Borders 2 also makes perfect sense.
I would have gone with 3.
I think 2 is better than 3, personally.
I'm kind of in that camp.
We probably would have gone with 3, but 2 was the big seller.
Two was
that PlayStation game. The same way I would associate the original SSX with the PlayStation 3. Yeah. So that one makes sense to me.
Yeah, so there's that. Then there's Destruction Derby. I would have put 2 on there personally, but I can see why they put the original.
Yeah, I remember getting the demo for this in one of their demo discs. Like, oh, this is pretty good, but also this is all I need is a demo.
Yeah.
This car is
special. Hey, kids, those of you are listening, back in the day, places, people like Sony used to send out demo discs.
Yeah. And sometimes they were better than magazines.
Yeah.
So there's that. I don't know. It's a classic Reflections game, but I don't think the original one holds up. But anyway.
I guess if we're comparing game by game to my list, this would have gone in the Keeliak to DNA imperative slot.
Yeah. So there's that. Final Fantasy VII.
I knew about.
That was like the platform-defining game.
Yeah.
Especially early on.
Yeah. Then GTA 1, which was a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah. 2 would have been the better one.
Hmm.
Like, here's what GTA was before fucking 3.
Yeah.
And that's
prepare
that's
yourself
gonna be,
because it sucked.
That's going to be, I think, like, sort of the entirety of this list is that, all right, yeah, that kind of makes sense, but why didn't you do this one?
Yeah. So far, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, the big one, like GTA games. Like, the big one, the biggest, like, there are two head-scratching ones in here. One I sort of understand, which is R4, which I think is, like, the best Ridge Racer game. But there's no reason you also can't have Ridge Racer on here, because Ridge Racer is fucking synonymous with PlayStation, particularly PlayStation 1. Like, that was – that and Battle Arena Toshinden launch games, it was like, in your face, this is the new shit. Sega fucking sucks. Nintendo can eat a dick. This is where we're going. Like, that was, like, their attitude. The whole, you are not ready. All of that, like, is encompassed. I feel like that change is in those two games. And,
yeah, though, I think the thing here that I got impression off the list is, like, they can easily do a second PlayStation Classic and have another 20 games that are – really good as well, and people still complain, like, oh, there's still like another 20 or 30 games you could still put on there.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, that's sort of the big problem, is there's such a huge library of cool games that just going 20 is going to, you know, not do justice to
that. That brings me to an interesting point, because I think you could take a look at this list and accuse them of approaching it like they're going to have multiple iterations.
Yeah,
they didn't do this like it's the only PS1 collection you're ever going to need. Mm-hmm. And I think that a 20-game list, while not perfect, you could put together that kind of a list and say, yeah, this is the PlayStation 1 in a nutshell.
Yeah,
not everyone would be thrilled with games that made the list or didn't make the list, but it would be fair. This is not that list.
No, this is not that list. And there's also still the question of whether or not these are the only games that you will see on there. You know, for the price that they're asking, I would be very surprised if Sony just made a cheapo, you know, system on a chip to run this and put like just the base amount of storage. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, what if this thing has Wi-Fi? You know, it would be something that they could announce.
If it was actually expandable, then this all makes sense.
Yeah.
That price of 2 controllers, probably not.
Hmm.
So,
yeah, but then again, it's the classic controllers. So
yeah, like it almost feels like this would be better served as if they just did sort of generations of it. Like, here's the launch, you know, PS1, and here's the stuff that you associate with it. Then they do like the RPG system, and like that probably wouldn't make them as much money because then people would be like, well, I don't give a fuck about this one version, but let me get that RPG system, or let me get the fighting game one or whatever. But
yeah,
it just, there's a couple of things. Like the other one on this list that makes no goddamn sense to me is Twisted Metal 1 over Twisted Metal 2. And I say that as a guy
that loves
both of those games tremendously. Twisted Metal 2 is the height of that series.
Yeah. And so I think that's where the whole second, like a second volume would come into play.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't know, it's just one of those things that just screams is like either, okay, you're trying to fuck people or, you're probably just
bad decision makers.
Yeah, like it doesn't, because this feels like it was one of those things that could be remedied. Or, you know, Sony is also a company that doesn't seem like it's a very big fan of actually taking advantage of what it has on its hands. I mean, we've seen how shitty they've been about backwards compatibility.
Microsoft appreciates their back catalog more than anyone, and they have the weakest one of all.
Right, which is really kind of comical. And it's funny because this also feels like a knee-jerk reaction to the Nintendo classic systems, because like I also don't think there's any reason why you wouldn't do this with some OG DualShock 1 controllers, you know, and then throw Metal in there. It screams like they want to do a second version of it and then have this be something that they get $400 or $500 total out of people on, which I just
wallets are going to get a firm rogering if that's the case.
And that and we've seen that that's how Sony operates. You know,
well, I think the thing with the dual stick, the DualShock, is that can scare off the average gamer pretty quickly versus here's the original PlayStation controller and you can play all these games with that just fine.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Actually, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit because one of these games on the list actually is kind of dependent on the DualShock, and that's Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
No, I played it without it.
Yeah, but no, the thing is it might just be – maybe it's different for you, Chris, but that was the game that sold the DualShock one.
The game that sold me was Ape Escape. That game was fucking awesome.
So Ape Escape required it.
Yeah, right. but it was a good selling point. It's like, oh, shit, this is awesome use of the sticks.
Yeah.
If you go back and you read anything that anybody talked about where people were pulling in Rumble and everything else like that, Metal Gear Solid was the thing.
Yeah, because you play without it,
but it's a markedly different experience. And I remember particularly like the two sort of flashpoints in that game for people. The first one was the hindy, yeah. And so you feel that rumble, and then the DARPA chief having a fucking heart attack. And you feel his heartbeat through the controller. That was like game changing at the time. And then you had the others, you know, then they started throwing in the crazy shit like, you like Castlevania, don't you? Like all of that stuff was a very subversive game. But part of that subversion and part of those things didn't work without that controller being present. So including Metal Gear in it and not including that controller, just it doesn't make any sense.
And not including Symphony of the Night.
In regards to Metal Gear and the DualShock, like, what was the primary thing, the rumble or the analog?
The rumble.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, the game was mostly like 4-way run. Yeah. It wasn't really an analog game.
Okay, yeah. Because my first experience with Metal Gear Solid, believe it or not, was actually with Twin Snakes, and I never used analog on there. I actually just used a D-pad, so.
Yeah, no, it was really about the rumble. That was the first game that I can even remember where rumble actually was something, and it was actually used really, really effectively. Because like, and especially like that stuff where that DARPA chief has a heart attack, and you feel his heart going do like jamming through your hands is really fucking surreal. It's something that's completely normal now, but at the time it was like, oh my fucking god.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if there'd be like a DualShock USB thing that maybe an 8-bit DOE would offer, sort of thing, let you plug in your own DualShock, or they offer their own like wireless one that plugs into this.
If the ROM supports it.
Yeah, if it supports it. You might just be able to plug a DualShock 4 in and it'll probably work fine.
Yeah, you know? Maybe.
So there's that. And jumping back here, we got Intelligent Cube.
Yeah, that was another one of those games I played only in demo form, but that was also because it wasn't really printed many copies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this one.
From what I've heard, a pretty solid puzzle game. So.
Yeah. This is the game that like everybody heard of, but nobody played.
Yeah. It's one of those. Yeah.
I remember
seeing commercials for it.
Yeah.
It's one of those weird Japanese games that came out all the time on PS1.
Yeah.
It's like, holy shit, you're just dodging these blocks that are just coming at you. What the fuck?
Yeah. So, I mean, that one makes sense for, you know, just one of the kooky weird slots for sure. Then we have one that
because that's part of what made that was part of what was great about the first PS1 era was
they were giving chances to everything.
The willingness to experiment.
Yep.
This was weird Sony in its prime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is that. Then of course Jumping Flash, which is let's face it, a cult classic.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised they haven't revisited that series for the PlayStation VR.
Yeah. That would be...
I don't know. I don't know how well that would work.
Yeah. You'd have to do some tuning with the movie.
I kind of like Astro Bot, like the third-person platforming thing. Versus being the first-person jumping and all that.
Yeah. So there's that. And then, moving back down here, we got Mr. Driller.
Yeah, that was a nice surprise to see that.
It goes squarely into the puzzle game box.
Yep. Yeah. And it's actually a competitive quite a good one too. Yeah,
and it's a Namco title. Shocking.
Yeah. Like so. On Metal Gear Solid, like the weird thing that undercuts that is there's no other Konami games here. I don't think.
Yeah.
So there's nothing else to feed into the Psycho Mantis thing.
Yeah, they would have to sprinkle save games in there just for that.
Really
purpose.
Surprised by that because Konami usually loves these kinds of projects.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. But they're also Konami is kind of in a weird fuck everything.
Yeah.
Well, not just that. They also just re-released Symphony of the Night, and it's like
I think that's partly why that's not in there.
Yeah,
like that's did a really good job something that undercuts some of this stuff because there's no Crash games, no Spyro games, no Symphony of the Night. So
yeah,
that's like a lot of that undercuts some of this. But also,
there could have been
Suikoden,
there could have been Vandal Hearts, there could have been
the missing Suikoden and Vandal Hearts is the thing that sticks out to me the most. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Those are just why would you do, because like I think in a lot of ways, like I think for a lot of like budding RPG players at the time, Suikoden especially was like this gateway thing, like here's something that looks like the 16-bit games, it is not, is more than that. And then of course, you know, you have that change into what Suikoden 2 was able to do, and it's like I think it's definitely, you have that cult classic status, but also just, you know, going back to it, like Konami had a great set of RPG output on the PS1. And then this is not and I feel like those are also games that are completely synonymous with the PlayStation 1, which, you know, having them missing doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was not one of those games I cared about as much, because, like, Final Fantasy 7 and 8 and 9, and, Legend of Dragoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some other
how old were you when the PlayStation 1 came out? Just out of curiosity.
96, I was 10.
That's
so it was like, this was my prime time, was PS1 was, like, my favorite console.
Yeah, but I think the difference is that the reason I'm asking it is because, like, for me, I was 16, and so I had money.
Super Nintendo is your like prime time console.
Yeah, like
PlayStation was for me.
Yeah, but to that point, like the reason like why Suikoden and all that stuff really worked for me was because at the time I had the money and the PlayStation offered a really unique experience as far as the way that games were priced. Like, for instance, Suikoden 1 was $40. Vandal Hearts.
Yeah, they rushed down to the $30, $40, $50 price point immediately.
Right. And so what happened was that, especially for somebody like me at the time, where it was like, okay, I got free time and I have some cash because I was working a part-time job. It was like, so I can go buy a 30, like, because Vandal Hearts was $30. And Suikoden was 40. So it was like, Suikoden came out, and so did Vandal Hearts, really close to the launch of that system. So you weren't thinking about Final Fantasy VII. I wanted something to play in the meantime.
Yeah.
I could see it at a different thing, like where everything was out at once, and you would go, well, of course I would choose Final Fantasy VII. Of course I would choose Final Fantasy IX or like Chrono Cross or anything at that particular time. You know?
Played RPGs on the Super Nintendo, right?
I did.
I didn't know what an RPG was until Final Fantasy VII.
Right,
I was the guy that was the Mario fan. I played Super Mario RPG, and I was like, "What the fuck is this? Why?"
Yeah, that was pretty much me too.
No.
I was like, "This what menus? What the fuck is this?
Right.
Why can't I just jump on the dudes?"
Well, I think it's interesting to sort of look at it that way too, because like for folks like me or Pat or Phil that were into RPGs at the time, Suikoden is really, really good. And is really synonymous with the PlayStation. Whereas for somebody like you, whose first RPG was 7. It's probably not even on your radar. And that's kind of...
It wasn't on my radar until it was on the PS3.
Right. And that's another thing that's interesting.
I can't co-sign that hard on Suikoden.
I can't. But it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, if you were already into RPGs, all of a sudden here's this system that has a whole fucking lot of them besides Final Fantasy. And that was really, really, like, just different. We didn't, you know, and then Final Fantasy came out, 7 came out and really blew the doors off of it for a lot of folks. So, and I also think Suikoden does something that's interesting that I haven't seen a lot of other RPGs do since then, which is the castle building mechanics were wholly unique. You went around and you recruited more people, so you got to do more cool shit for your castle, which then puts you back out in the world and made you want to do more. It wasn't like, well, we just got to mainline this whole fucking story and that's what we're going to do. Like, Suikoden was very, very different in that sense. And the other thing is that it also, for me, it was the first game I never had to grind in besides Chrono Trigger. So that was one of those things where I was like, this is really fucking cool. I don't have to do this bullshit. Like, I can just kind of get to it. So that was another reason it was a really big deal for me.
Yeah. Well, that game was an experience, Pinata.
Yeah.
Like, you go through 3 or 4 battles and level up.
But it's not on here, because fuck you.
But it's not on here. What is on here is the original Oddworld's Abe's Odyssey, which I guess makes sense.
Yeah, but that was always more of like a PC game for me.
Mm. Really?
I saw lots of ads for PS1.
I didn't even know there was a PC version.
Yeah,
there was. I always associated eventually later on any of the Oddworld stuff with the Xbox.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but that was also.
Lord Landing kind of made it impossible not to.
Yeah.
So there's that. Then Rayman, which okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much a given.
Yeah.
It's like the hey, here's Ubisoft. If you don't know them,
right?
Most people probably didn't know them.
No,
they're French.
They're French. They made a guy.
There's a really good 2D platformer.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there's that. Let's see here. Revelations Persona.
I love that pick.
Yeah,
I didn't see that one.
Now, here's the question.
I didn't see that one coming either, and I own the fucking game when it came out.
Now, here is my question. Are they going to be going with the original...
the racist?
Yeah.
That's a game that I played through it on the PSP and really enjoyed it.
They're probably just going to dump the PSP or the PS1 ROM.
Yeah. And the bad part of that game is there's no XP balancing in it.
No.
Nope. If a character dies in your party, they're permanently behind on XP compared to everybody else. And it's like, there's no real balance here. And trying to figure out how to talk to the specific persona to get either bonuses or recruit them, it makes no sense unless you're just using like a wiki or writing down.
Yeah, that game is, I got that when that came out. It is so fucking obtuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really kind of astonishing that was,
I just can't wait for so many people who got in with Persona 3 or 4 or 5 to get into this very old school ball breaking RPG that they totally aren't ready for.
Yeah, like first person
rolling. God, dude, that man, this is why I hate what I hate Sony for. They're really gonna put the PS1 version on here.
Yes.
Yeah.
When they absolutely don't have to.
That's also kind of the charm of putting the PS1 versions. Like, here's what localization was in 97, 98, whatever this came out.
Yeah.
Ah.
Quit bitching about the localizations you get now.
Yeah. So,
did you mention Resident Evil?
Not yet.
Speaking of
localizations that suck.
Resident Evil Director's Cut. Ooh.
Yeah. People are like, oh, why not Resident Evil 2? And it's like, there's Resident Evil 2 coming out in a few months.
Yeah, but see, you know what, though? This is also one of those that I'd frankly probably argue for. Like, anybody that played this shit when it first came out, when that dog came through the window, shit their pants.
Yeah, I tried to play it. I never played it originally because I was a wuss. I could not get to the dog. I knew where the holly was. I just couldn't figure out the dumb puzzles because it's one of those games that I don't think holds up for people coming into it now.
I would agree.
No, it does not.
Like the logic, the puzzles. Controls,
no way. Yeah.
I just lost interest in the concept once I figured out what it was.
And you pick up like weird symbols, like shields, and it's like, what the fuck do I do with
this? Yeah. Why is this house set up this way? Don't you dickheads have keys? Like, I lost the shield symbol, so I can't get into the garage. I can't.
You gotta go find the gem and stick it in the statue, and that'll unlock the cupboard that has the shield that you need.
Yeah, it's like,
But it makes sense for it to be included because Resident Evil, like, again, it was that genre didn't exist without PlayStation. Yeah.
This is like where it began.
We wouldn't have Silent Hill without it.
Yeah. So it makes sense to me that it's definitely in there.
I'll say this about Resident Evil 2 is that, like, Capcom has been refusing to put that PS1 version on sale for the past, like, 6 months because now that the remake is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they did that with the first game when that was in the works for PS4.
Yeah.
They are weirdly antagonistic like that in the same way that Square is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Square refused to put any version of 4, I think Final Fantasy 4 that was on the PS1.
Yeah.
Because they had the PSP version. Like, oh, that's good enough. They didn't put Final Fantasy 1 and 2, those remakes, on the PSP.
Well, to be fair, the PSP version is the definitive version of Final Fantasy 4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, 1 and 2 that they remade for the PSP, like, they never released those because it's like, oh, we got the PS1 version. It's like, those suck.
Those are the same versions that were on the PSP, though.
Yeah.
Just different graphics.
Actually, no. Yeah.
Yeah, but they redid localization, some of that stuff.
Well, it's interesting because, like, when you're talking about this stuff, I think the other part that's really kind of crazy when we're talking about this is sort of that iterative nature, because these remakes or these re-releases or anything else that these people have done have really kind of allowed them to make their games still relevant when, frankly, their mechanics and everything else like that have made it so they aren't. You know, like, you go back, like, Resident Evil absolutely makes sense to be included on that list because it was defining at that time. But, like, I would never go back and fucking play it.
Yeah.
Nope.
You know, not with there being the remake and all of that. Like, it's just something that I wouldn't fucking do. But
there are those people that stump for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They think that's what Resident Evil should be, like the tank controls. Like, I told him you could scare you and make it control like shit. And it's like, no. Dead Space proved you could have a really good controlling game.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was just they didn't know what else to do at the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's
luckily,
what it is.
Luckily, Capcom didn't listen to that.
Yeah. So I just, but for the record, I played Resident Evil 1 after I played Resident Evil 2.
Yeah.
As you can imagine, I was not impressed.
Yeah,
that's an interesting way to do things.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
The thing that always poisoned the well for me with survival horror was you had this group of games that came out right around the same time. Like, going outside of survival horror, you had Tomb Raider, you had this really interesting EA project called Fade to Black, and then you had Resident Evil. And when Resident Evil did not really functionally fit into that same box, I kind of cut away from it and haven't really been interested in survival horror since.
Hmm.
And that's just kind of poisoned the well for me with that genre.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not a big fan of the horror genre in general. It's not my bag. But
I was just hoping it was another third person shooter because that was a really interesting genre for me at the time. Yeah.
But I did. I played the fuck out of Resident Evil 1. I played the fuck out of Resident Evil 2, and I really didn't do anything past that. I played Code Veronica, and then I played 4. 4 sort of felt like the culmination of that series, but that's a different story entirely.
Man.
So, what else is on there? What else is on there that we can bitch about?
Well, Ridge Racer Type 4, we can't really bitch about that.
Yeah, it's a fantastic game.
Is that the one they had the NegCon, I think it was called?
Yeah,
the rotating controller that you kind of twisted.
The NegCon was
that was just the right,
that was around jet. Launch. It was the JogCon that they made.
JogCon,
for,
okay.
Yeah.
I know they made a couple of controllers, like weird controllers. It was like something con, like
lots of cons.
Yeah, the NegCon, which Wipeout XL used actually.
There's the GunCon. That was for
GunCon for games. Time Crisis, and then the JogCon for R4.
Yeah. This is a game I have on PS1, and I have not played it. It's one of those games I picked when I got cheap at GameStop.
Yeah.
I was like, I've heard good things.
R4 is interesting in that they integrated some visual novel elements with the single-player mode.
And that's where Race Driver came out of? Is that like the Ridge Racer spinoff?
No, it was R Race Evolution.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know there's like some spinoff like story thing they tried to do.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was a game that desperately needed to play like a Ridge Racer game.
Yeah,
it didn't remotely.
Was that a different team?
I imagine it was. If it was the same team, I want to know what got into them.
Yeah. So moving on, we have Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo.
Yeah, another good puzzle game. Like, this is a really solid slate of puzzle games here.
Yep.
Some of the best ones they have there.
Yeah, can't really complain about this choice.
Yep.
Because I think everybody, like, here probably played the shit out of that.
I played the HD remix. Yeah. With the loudest fuck shit on the fucking PS3 dashboard. You highlight that icon, it was blaring out of your speakers. No matter if it was midnight.
Well, it's a really pleasant surprise to see this game on the lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what do we got here? A Siphon Filter, which I really could have left, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also that game with the amazing running animation. Like, here's really what Metal Gear is called.
You can also tase people until they catch on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could do that.
As sadism simulator.
Yeah, this is one of those games that just doesn't hold up.
No, but it's, like, here's what Metal Gear Solid's competition.
And that's the thing. They put that on the same collection as Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah. So that's a bit strange.
Yeah.
This collection needs fucking Tenchu, dude.
Yeah, I could sign off on that. Yeah. We did get Tekken 3 on the same collection as Toshinden, so that's a good contrast right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still say Soul Edge would have been better.
Yeah.
But, Tekken 3
for
is
fighting
really
games.
Good.
Yeah, that's a good
Tekken
game.
Tekken
3
is awesome, yeah. Tekken 3 is one of those games where you're like, holy fucking shit, I can't believe they pulled this off.
Yeah, Tekken 3 is the game that made you look at the Tekken franchise and realize, okay, now they've kind of decided what it is they actually want to do with this.
Yeah.
And then they made Tekken 4 and you're like, what the fuck are you doing
with
this?
What were they doing with this? Yeah. Yeah. No, but the interesting part about Tekken 4 was pretty good, but I feel like they changed Jin too much for me because I was a Jin fan. But the thing about 3 was when you looked at it, and especially, you know, Pat knows this because doing arcade tournaments and everything else like that. Tekken 3 is nothing short of a fucking technical achievement on that system.
Yeah. Was that the game that like made the arcade to console difference like very negligible?
Yes.
Yeah, the biggest difference was the way that they rendered the fucking sky and the boxes around the actual arenas. They were like, I think they were standard like bitmaps.
The characters were lower poly on console, but not so much that it was glaring.
Yeah, I mean, it was the fact that they pulled it off was just fuck, man. It was so fucking good.
Yeah, and also it's like it also had not one but two excellent soundtracks.
Yep. We also got Tekken Bowl.
Yes, really Tekken Bowl.
Well, Tekken Bowl is tag tournament.
The characters too.
And Tekken Ball.
Tekken Ball, the volleyball version.
Yeah.
And Tekken Force, which is the beat 'em up.
Yeah. That was one of those things that was always really fun about that kind of thing, where it's like, what other kind of crazy shit can we put in here? You know, just for fun.
I had a friend who was playing the Tekken Force in 5. Mm. I was watching him, and it was like,
yes.
This is shit. Why are you still playing this? Good part of the game.
Let me unlock Dr. Baskanovich.
Yeah. So I guess also in Tekken 3, it's like, okay, so we've got a bunch of crazy shit now. What can we do to one-up this? Oh, I have an idea. Let's take this somewhat semi-obscure manga character that people only in Japan know and make him a secret character in our game. And that's how we ended up getting Gone.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That was also the star of a pretty solid Super NES platformer that nobody knows about.
Hmm.
Seriously, by the way, just for the curious, if you ever get a chance to get a copy of the original Gone manga, do it. It has no dialogue. It's 100% all art. It is amazing.
Yeah. Also, if you play the story mode with Gon and then you finish it, you have to skip the ending. Otherwise, you're going to be there for a really fucking long time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, because it loops.
Yep. Just keep going and going.
I forgot about that.
So, there was that. What else we got here? Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six, for some reason.
Wasn't that the worst version of Rainbow Six?
Yes,
it absolutely was. The game was fucking incredible on PC, and it's straight ass cheeks on the fucking face.
So, yeah, if we're going to get like the weird PC version out of like Diablo, like, I want to see what that was.
This would be like the equivalent of us getting the Nintendo 64 version of fucking StarCraft and saying that shit's definitive. Like,
oh, Jesus Christ.
No, it's not remotely fucking definitive. What the fuck are you thinking?
Yeah. I wonder if this is like a package deal with Rayman. Like, hey, we want another game on there.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, what else did we make for that system? Rainbow Six, put that on there.
Yeah, that's probably how that conversation went, to be honest. Let's see, what else did they have? Oh yeah, Twisted Metal, the first one. Yeah. Again, as I agree with Lee, that this should have been too.
Yeah.
And yet it was, it did have a very interesting look. I'll give it that much.
So what was wrong with the first game? Because I never actually sat down and played the full version of 1 or 2, but I did get the original demo disc that had 1 on it, and I played the shit out of that demo.
There's nothing wrong with 1. The problem is that everything that 1 does, 2 does astronomically better.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, you could look at, like, sort of 1 is like the framework for the eventual game that they would make. Like, this is sort of like the blueprint, and here's the house. It's got the fucking, you know, it's got stuff put up, but there's no fucking walls and there's no roof. And then whereas Twisted fucking Metal 2 is like, here's the mansion. Y'all enjoy yourselves.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that kind of thing.
It also had, there's like some weird, I guess, artifacts of the early PlayStation era then, especially of 90s gaming, because you probably don't really realize this until you actually play it. Back when Twisted Metal was first being designed and it was called High Octane, they had a bunch of FMV sequences that would go into it, but by the time they got to the PlayStation, they just...
It was no longer in vogue.
Yeah, so it's just still images.
Yeah, which is why the art style has this weird pseudo-digitized look to it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
That's why why the second one is definitely better, because they went for a straight comic book look, and it just...
It worked.
Yeah.
So that's there. And finally, Wild Arms, another good RPG on the PS1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That one I don't mind. That one, yeah. Wild Arms was also one of those ones that I felt really, like, established the PlayStation's identity when it came to RPGs, because, like, going back to what we mentioned a few 20 minutes ago, was all of a sudden the amount of RPGs that was on this fucking system was just crazy. It was like, holy shit, like, look at all this cool stuff that I can actually get and is different and I can play and blah. Like, it was just a completely different thing. And Wild Arms is one of those that's indicative of that, I think, along with Final Fantasy. It's not one that's really moved forward, but it's another one of those similar to, like, the Grandia series, where it was like, RPGs just aren't Final Fantasy, you know?
Yeah. So,
yeah. I think there's plenty of ways you could improve this lineup, depending on what sort of taste you're appealing to, but I think as a variety of games, you got some good stuff here. Good puzzle games, some good fighting games, some good RPGs, and some neat choices. Like, Persona is not one I would have ever considered. Because I don't even really know.
I just say, go back to episode 201. I think I had a better list that was still very safe and feasible and conservative, and I thought I was actually shooting pretty low with that list, but Sony managed to undercut me.
Yeah, so that's the PlayStation Classic. It comes out December 6th, and it's going to be $100.
December
3rd. Okay, 3rd. So yeah, that's the launch date. And
ready to have downloadable games on it, because I think that's the only way there's any saving this lineup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll point out that every single one of the games on this list is also a PS1 Classic on a PS3. So just putting that out there.
Nice.
I think Intelligent Cube is on there. GTA.
Yep, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were on sale recently. I know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So no one's getting one?
No, probably not.
I probably will, just because I'm hoping you can hack that motherfucker.
Oh, somebody is going to. It's probably going to be like 24 hours before someone pulls it off.
Especially with the USBs on it.
Yeah.
The USBs on it and whatever is behind that port, which they still haven't.
I mean, a lot of the time, man, like, that's why I'm getting these classic consoles, because I got fucking a million different ways to play these games, but it's just like, somebody's going to hack this shit and they're going to make it so I can do, like, I can put on the things that I actually want to play on this thing, and then I'm fucking in there. Which is kind of ridiculous, because, again, I just said I have a bunch of other ways to play it. But there's just something about, like, no, this is the way this looks. This is the way the controller felt, like, that kind of stuff. Like, as much as I love emulation and, like, you know, and any of that stuff, there's there's still something to me that, as far as the tactile experience, it's really important of having that original controller. I don't, it's not necessarily like, well, let me shove the card in here or do, you know, something like that. It, but it, mm-hmm. I do enjoy having that original controller.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, so, I understand the sentiment of hacking it. I mean, my SNES and my NES are hacked too, but I feel like once you actually do that, you have like less of a reason to even boot it up anymore. Like maybe I have fun with it for about 15 minutes, and after that, it's just lost its value. But
no, I would disagree because I think it's at this point, like I could see it in that.
You're
that
putting the wrong games on it.
Maybe that's
no. The problem is people put too much on it.
Yeah. I mean, we all have backlogs we'll never finish, and this only makes it work.
But I mean, it's like,
but see,
you can put.
Oh, go ahead, Phil.
No, I was going to say you can put a you can put the entire NES library on the NES Classic, and that's like 600, 700 plus games on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that UI is not meant for that.
Yeah, it's just not to navigate it. But yeah. Like for me, the other part of it that's really cool, and it's definitely a different experience for me than I think for you guys, is that this is also a really unique way for me to share this kind of stuff with my kid because he likes retro games, mm-hmm. and then, so it's not just you're playing this on a fucking on the PlayStation 4, or we're doing this through an emulator. It's like, this is like what the Super Nintendo controller felt like. This is like we were doing that with like Secret of Mana and things like that. So that part of it is just an interesting sort of like, in a lot of ways, kind of like a time capsule that I can have on sitting on my entertainment center. That part of it's very cool for me.
In my opinion, that's actually the best part of it, especially with the fact that these things always release around Christmas. Mm. And for me, that's the time when I'm always with most of my extended family, so I get to show them how I've played my games for the most part. I mean, looking back at the NES and SNES Classic with those short-ass cords, it makes the kids believe, wow, you played this back in the day. Like, wow.
Yeah, we sat next to the TV, and the only thing that's missing is having to put that motherfucker on Channel 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in regards to the actual PlayStation Classic, I never actually bought one at launch, so I don't have that same sentimental value as you guys have for it. I mean, Chris was talking about his first RPG. My first RPG was a Super Mario RPG, and I never even had a Super Nintendo. My gateway was actually Pokemon. So,
mm-hmm.
Oh wow!
And then the price at $100 is just especially for this group of games. Yeah, I'm not getting it. So.
Yeah, I will say that the value proposition on this is a lot harder to swallow at $100. Like, I feel like that's really a miss. This feels like this should be a $60 console. Putting it at $100, it's the same thing. It reeks of, arrogant-ass Sony.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going to commend anything about it, it's the fact that the lineup is pretty diverse. Like, the main things I've seen with all the fantasy lists and whatnot is that everybody had it be the RPG machine, and like there's nothing wrong with that.
That's because that's what it was. It's honest about what the system was. Why pretend that it was more diverse at the top end than it really was?
Yeah. I mean,
it was a great diversity.
But when I first got my hands on it, it was about Gran Turismo. It was about Crash Bandicoot. So,
I think one of the interesting things that's going to happen with these systems going forward, if this is the kind of stuff that these companies are doing and really kind of trying to capitalize on what their previous stuff was, this is going to be, I think we're at the point where, and I think it really happens with the PlayStation is that these systems from PS1 going forward were very different things to different people. Like, you guys have heard me talk about, like, this was just the fucking RPG machine. Same with Pat, but to the point earlier, like these things were very diverse for the most part. There was a lot of stuff there depending on what you like to play. I think there was more diversity in the PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 lineup that we really haven't seen since. Could you imagine what it's going to be like when they do a PlayStation 2 Classic? Like, I don't think anybody's going to be fucking happy.
Yeah.
Make
nobody happy with one of those.
I mean, they want to come up with a conceptual list of 20 games, though.
But see, but the thing is, if you look at it, like, the Super Nintendo Classic didn't really have that problem, with the exception of, like, missing things like Chrono Trigger. And then I think you could probably, like, realistically go, I could add 20 more games to this and it would be perfect. But when you think about how you would dissect the PlayStation 1 or the PlayStation 2, I mean, we're talking about hundreds of games, comparatively because of what this
there were meant a ton to of games released on
Well, those. If you start from the point that you know you're not going to make everybody happy, I still think you can come up with an effective list of 20 games that is more effective than what they've produced.
Yeah. The fact that we're talking about PS2 Classic scares me.
Yeah, really that'll probably be $150 bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say very much this collection here is more interesting to me than the NES Classic or the Super Nintendo Classic. Because, as I said, this was like my prime
this was your system.
I get that.
Because on the Super Nintendo, I was pretty ignorant of what was coming out. I didn't really read magazines or anything to know what I should be playing. So I didn't play Zelda. I didn't play Metroid. I didn't play the RPGs until way later.
Right.
So this was the one where I was actually reading magazines. I was playing the OPM discs. I was into the things here. A lot of these games are games I at least was interested in if I never got around to it because I was still like 10, 12, 14 years old, not really having any money to spend on stuff. So I stuck to a lot of like sports games and such, as well as like Gran Turismo and all that. Like, there's a huge depth of what is available for that system. And it gets undercut a bit because a lot of it's licensed. And you're not going to have Tony Hawk on this.
Yeah, that's the
you're not going to have Gran Turismo. You're not going to have...
Yeah, that's another one that's also like that. Yeah, that's where... And this is where we start getting into that really glaring stuff. Because, like, the fact... Like, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater was fucking defining.
Yeah.
As far as the PlayStation goes. And I think that is the biggest... There's two huge glaring misses here for me. Tony Hawk is one of them, and Symphony of the Night is the other. Like those were genre defining.
I would have gone with Tony Hawk too.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm just talking about in terms of representation. Like we could say the same thing about like Twisted Metal 1 to Twisted Metal 2, but like at least with some of this stuff, it's there, right? Like you have something representing it. You don't have that with Tony Hawk. And then, like I said, you definitely don't have Symphony of the Night, which is just Symphony of the Night's the biggest glaring one. Symphony of the Night reminds me of Chrono Trigger missing from the SNES Classic. Like
I think that's Konami being like, we gave you the fucking collection on PS4. What do you want? Fuck off.
Yeah.
We're going to try and take PT from you, you assholes.
No, like, that's they didn't actually do that, but no, they didn't.
But all we want from Konami is a ROM. Like,
bitch, we ain't asking you to do a lot. It's not like we're asking you to come in on weekends.
Oh, we gave you Metal Gear. Well, shut up. We fired that guy. Yeah. We don't want that make you happy anymore.
Like, you know, in regards to licensing, like, you know, it's totally heartbreaking that once the N64 Classic comes out, we're not going to get a single wrestling game on there.
Yeah, that's because those were the games that I played on that. I didn't really care about. I like Super Mario 64, but I played Crash Bandicoot and Spyro before that, so I knew what 3D platformers were.
I think also, though, I think the N64, if you do the N64 Classic, I don't think there's going to be much of a sort of like hand-wringing like we've done about a list. Like, I don't think there's 20 games on the Nintendo 64
that I'd be like, I got to get there, it. But that
there's maybe
it's like 15,
three or four
maybe.
Games I would have, and then... whatever else.
Yeah. Like, all that stuff I liked is... They're the three wrestling games I played. WCW, NWO, Revenge, WrestleMania 2000, and...
No Mercy.
No Mercy, yeah.
And for me, give me Star Fox 64, Wave Race 64, and Sin and Punishment. Thanks, I'm done.
Yeah.
I mean, we could discuss at length all of the stuff that we want on there, but I think we've already spent half an hour on this, so let's move on to the rest of the show. And Nintendo Direct's November 1st announcement, which was basically all of the Smash you could possibly want. Yeah. And some.
And is it my imagination, or does Sakurai look more and more ill and emaciated every time we see him? This is taking a toll.
Yes, it is.
We were saying he's crunching 5 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's like, you know, like hopped up on speedballs and, you know, Red Bull for the entirety of the announcement because, yeah, he don't look so good. I mean, which is unfortunate because, this is the ultimate Smash, so maybe he'll be able to rest after this one.
I definitely need this game in my life for sure.
Yeah. So what do we have? Well, we got some announcements from there. New characters, obviously.
Mm-hmm. We got Ken Masters.
No, they're calling him an Echo Fighter for Ryu, but there are substantial gameplay differences. They're basing it on Super Turbo Ken. So
yeah, I was noticing that. That was actually one of the things that got me like, I might buy this game.
Like they're calling him an Echo Fighter, but he's really his own character. And I think we're seeing that kind of dynamic between Simon and Richter Belmont as well.
Yeah.
And of course we got another Pokemon, which is Incineroar.
And pretty much all of his moves seem to come from Zangief. Am I the only one who noticed that?
Yeah. No, I actually saw it too.
Well, he's a wrestler.
Yeah, he's got a lot of Gief's moves. He even has Gief's V skill from Street Fighter V.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'll be shocked if Gief doesn't show up at some point as an Echo Fighter.
Yeah.
And then that right now. After that, we also found out that we're actually getting a campaign.
Yes. They definitely went with a pretty dark theme for the start of the story mode, but I'm just happy to see it in there.
Yeah.
And if they tap into the same kind of energy that the Melee Adventure mode had, oh my god.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I actually did not see this happening, especially with Smash really being more about getting third-party characters into the game as of late. Seeing all of them, you know, all in one scene was just pretty cool to me. Yep. It's also
that was the most timely water drop sound effect I could have imagined.
Yeah. I also like the slight fuck you that Sakurai gave us by making Kirby the hero.
Yeah. I don't know, like the way I see it, since in the years we've had since Smash Melee, Smash has been less of a celebration of Nintendo games and more of a celebration of video gaming from a broader scope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so if we get another Melee-style single-player campaign where you're going through all of these worlds of the games that are included, this could really be something special.
Yeah.
Like if you have stages that are based on all of the IPs that are being crammed into this game, that is a celebration of video games.
Yeah.
The likes of which we have never seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus I do want to I do want them to sort of like branch out the sort of Smash meta universe. Because, like, they've been ever since at least Melee, they've been suggesting that there's more going on underneath the surface with every game. And then with Brawl, when we finally had, like, an actual proper campaign. So, yeah, this is... I really want to see what they're going to do with this.
Yeah.
Also, the main song had lyrics.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But considering, here's the thing though, what's going to end up being the final boss here? Because
time. Do you have time to do everything in this game? That's the final
yes.
boss.
Yeah.
The glove.
No, I think the final boss will be Sakurai's angry face.
It'll be either that, or it'll be just like
Suda.
No, it'll be like. Okay, so, like, consider, like, how the bosses have sort of progressed through it. Like, we started out with just the glove, which was supposed to be, like, representative of whoever this kid was that was playing with his dog. And then, by the time Melee comes around, we've got two hands, one of which is the regular hand and one that's the crazy hand. And then, by the time we ended up with Brawl, we got this, well, it just, and then we ended up with the one for Smash Brothers Wii U, and it's an angel character that once you defeat it, it's just a heart in a crate that just wants you to kill it. So is the last boss just gonna legit be like some humanoid figure that just straight hangs itself before you can fight it?
It's Sakurai's dick.
Well, there is the long-running theory that the whole Master Hand thing and everything that's evolved from it is sort of a metaphor for the creator breakdown that Sakurai himself has gone through over 20 years of developing the Smash series.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
which is really fucked up when you think about it, but you could also very easily convince me of it.
Yeah.
So there's that. And they also outline their DLC plans.
It's going to be 5 characters, 5 stages, and a bunch of music in packs of 1 character, 1 stage, and a few tracks each. Mm-hmm. Those are going to be available for $6 a piece, where you can take a $5 discount by buying the season pass. Mm-hmm. These are going to be staggered through February of 2020, so you know, it's going to be a while before we see all of this, but Sakurai himself, it seemed to be very understanding about people who might be cynical about it, say, look, if you aren't confident that this is going to be content of value, don't buy the season pass. I'm not going to twist your arm. So he's definitely letting people approach with caution and understanding why they might want to.
Isn't there a free character if you buy it early?
No, well, that's not one of the packs, though.
Okay, I'm just saying.
That's Piranha Plant.
Extra stuff.
Yeah, Piranha Plant is free DLC early on, will be paid DLC probably around February or March. Yeah. But if you buy the game early, it's free.
Okay.
All right. I think we're going to have to wrap it up there.
I just want to say that I would love to see Nintendo get through just one of these Nintendo Directs without a new meme coming out of it.
Yeah, because now Piranha Plant is the new Waluigi.
Well, and Kirby being the only character to survive the apocalypse, and
yeah, I mean they're memes itself. I mean, like 5 minutes after this came out, they had a Thanos trailer already. So it's
I'm just gonna come right out and say it. Fuck meme culture.
Yeah, I'm pretty much done with memes. Just
well, now here the only way they can like somehow one up that shit is. We later on they end up adding a secret surprise 6 DLC character, and it turns out to be Bowsette.
Oh god!
I would riot. Oh god! I would riot.
It wouldn't even be a paid DLC character. It would just appear.
Yeah.
Oh, for fuck's sake! Don't enable them.
Imagine if there was a Soul Calibur character creation thing in that game.
Oh no!
Oh no!
Oh god, no!
They ever fixed the box thing where you could just make your character surrounded by a box?
I haven't patched the game yet.
Mm, yeah. So, all right. So I guess we'll still wrap on the show.
I just want to say if Phil's wrong on Grand Theft Auto and Intelligent Q being on PSN. They're not. No.
Well, fuck me.
Yep.
So
at least there's no misunderstanding about how PlayStation Classic is. It's not the, you know, the PS Classic, or we can do anything. It's not SNES or NES or anything else like
that. The Piss Classic.
Yeah, the Piss Classic.
The Piss Classic, yeah.
The Piss Classic.
Yeah. Anyways. So we're going to wrap up here. We were going to do the Red Dead Redemption, but then we actually got a show out of it. So
I think it'll be one of those things where I think, as everybody else has been playing it more, it is that's the equivalent of a slow burn game. So I think those things that we can have a much better conversation about next week when there's more.
Definitely.
I think it's one of those games. That
now, promise me that there's not going to be a real show next week then. Let me know ahead of time.
We just won't tell you.
News. Screwed.
I know. I think the reason I'm bringing it up is because I think maybe the way that I'm playing it, and then the way that Brandon is, and the way that Danner are, this is a game that is going to be different for every person that approaches it. So I'm real curious to see what their experiences are compared to mine. So
it's seeming like this is a real water cooler type of game. So
yeah, very much so.
Yeah. With that, we're going to end the show. I want to remind everybody that if you haven't subscribed to the show yet, you can do so on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast aggregator, except for Spotify, because they don't want us for some reason. But apart from that, you can also find us at smashpad.com, where our written content is presented. With that, I have been Filippo D'Anelfo for Brandon Perkins, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Ologi, Lee Lamb, and Dan Red Victorio. Hey, I remembered everybody. Yay. We'll see you next week.